Off the Indic, of course, are brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
That was a hot mess inside a dumpster fire, inside a train wreck.
You need tickets for the Seahawks' next home game against the Rams on Thursday Night Football. Venue Kings can get you in the door for just over $100 right now at VenueKings.com. Be sure and use code SOFTY at checkout for a little bit of a discount. So let's start with news in the NFL. Panthers and Texans on Thursday Night Football. Texans quarterback Tyrod Taylor going on the IR with a hammy injury. That means rookie quarterback, the former Stanford Cardinal Davis Mills, will start in a spot while Deshaun Watson rots on his couch in Houston. The Browns also putting Pro Bowl wide receiver Jarvis Landry on the IR with a MCL sprain. He's out at least three games.
Aaron Jones tied a Monday Night Football record with not one, not two, not three, but four touchdowns. The Packers cruise after allowing the opening TD. They outscored the Lions 35-10 in the last three and a half quarters to win last night.
Jeez.
You don't say.
Did you hear the other Aaron Jones story from last night? He had a necklace with a locket.
He lost it, right?
And his father's ashes were inside the locket, and it fell off in the end zone during the game, and he found it after the game was over. NBA Ben Simmons saying he will not report for the start of Sixers training camp next week. He wants a trade out of Philadelphia. And J.J. Redick, the former Duke guard after 15 years in the NBA, announcing his retirement today.
The Bills are working out former Hawks cornerback Quentin Dunbar.
Ooh.
And another former Hawks secondary member just got cut. Titans have released Bradley McDougald.
NCAA football, Utah quarterback Charlie Brewer, after 4 years and transferring from Baylor, is now leaving Utah after starting the first three games. He has been replaced by Cam Rising as the starting quarterback of the Utes.
And here we go.
And now, two goofy, wacko, out-of-touch homers.
Just brutal radio. Just horrible.
Live.
41 yards.
From Elliott Bay.
Can you feel it now?
Hey, Seattle.
This is Softy and Dick.
All right, here we go. Happy Tuesday. Husky Honks coming up 4 o'clock. John Wilner, 5:05 today on the radio show. Brian Schmetzer will be with us as well, coming up at 5:45.
It was at Triscuit.
Talking about their League's Cup final in Vegas tomorrow. And then Corey Brock will be with us at 6:05 talking some Mariner baseball. They get the win yesterday.
Yay!
Three games out in the wild card race. They've assured themselves of a 500 season with their 81st victory last night. So Corey joining us today with Marco
Gonzalez
on the mound tonight against Paul Blackburn. But I got a stat for you guys that I think you'll like start the radio show. Well, really, this is actually a stat for winners.
Stats are for losers.
To be totally honest with you, because I was at the Emerald Queen last night. We're going to be there for the Seahawks game on Sunday. The sports bar with the fancy smancy leather chairs is now open. People were enjoying those chairs last night. You were there with me. It's an unbelievable spot. Cannot wait for the actual sports book itself to open in a few weeks from now. But if you're looking for a place to watch a Seahawks Viking game on Sunday, come on down and join us, because the fancy schmancy leather chairs are now available for your ass at the Emerald Queen Casino to enjoy. And your tookus. So get on down there on Sunday for the game. But there's a reason to embrace, I think, the handicapping world even more so now than ever. Let's face it, up until this year, when we had handicappers like Lee Sterling on the air, Rick Neuheisel would give us his picks, we would give picks for Fact or Fiction, I always kind of wondered, you know, how were people behind the scenes getting action? Were they fighting a guy in an alley somewhere?
Right.
Were they illegally tapping into some satellite dish on top of their RV?
Yeah. It's
what's
like the old
going on?
Prohibition days,
right?
With the moonshine and the dark alleys, right?
Wearing foil hats, you know, whatever, talking to somebody in Vegas or Atlantic City. But now that everything's out in the open, which, you know, I look outside and the world is still spinning. We have legalized gambling, sports gambling coming to Washington State. And look at that. The sun still shines. The moon still sets.
We're not all going to hell, Dave.
The world still spins, and we've got legalized sports gambling in the state of Washington. So I think even more so now than ever, you should be paying attention to guys like Lee Sterling on Friday, guys like John Wilner and his Wilner's Winner tonight at 5:05, Rick Neuheisel at, 3:10 on Thursdays on the radio show, and then Fact or Fiction every day with us at least.
Well, just our show.
At 3:35, exactly. So here's the deal. Here's the stats are for losers.
Stats are for losers.
It's really a stats are for winners. If you had played every single game that we have given out so far on the show, Rick Neuheisel's game, John Wilner's game, Lee Sterling's games every week, and our Fact or Fiction games, you would be 22-7.
Yeah, baby.
On the air so far on this radio show.
Wow.
There is not one handicapper in America
that's 22
who is 22-7 after 29 games. But this show is. This show right here is bringing families together, not forcing them apart like the guy on the air from 10 to 1.
F you, Puckett.
We're putting kids through college right now.
22-7, Dick.
Including mine.
Unbelievable.
This is fantastic. We got to stay on it. Press, but you did that like 20 minutes before I make a pick. Like you put some pressure on my shoulders.
Well, listen, you think when the LOB took the field for any one game in 2013, they gave a damn about what people thought the expectations were? I mean, I think we should be getting cocky. We should be like Keyshawn Johnson. Just get the hell out of the way and let me make the damn pick. Let me make the pick. So 3:35 today, about a half hour from now, we'll have our pick number 2 of the week for Fact or Fiction. Today is Tuesday, Dick Day. So 3:35, and then John Wilner, who's also 3-0 on the year so far, he will join us at 5:05 with his Wilner's winner on the program, looking to go 4-0. So if you're looking for a place to get accurate picks, not a bunch of loser picks like other shows on this station, come here at 3:35 every day. Lee Sterling Fridays at 3:45 as well. John Wilner at 5:05 and Rick Neuheisel at 3:10 Thursdays on the show, because we give out nothing but winners here on the radio show. So, Husky Honks at 4:00. We'll get Cam Cleland, Dick Baird, Greg Lewis together and talk about the win against Arkansas State. Look ahead to the Cal game on Saturday. Was thinking about this driving in today. That game on Sunday still is kind of buzzing in the back of my brain after what happened to the Hawks on Sunday, Dick, against the Tennessee Titans. And looking forward to see how they bounce back. I mean, you got two teams on Sunday in Minneapolis against the fighting Paul Allens, by the way.
The season can't end like that!
Who are kind of just as peeved as the Hawks are. I mean, they missed a chip shot field goal that would have won the game against Arizona. And you got a pissed off broadcaster, too, apparently, and Paul Allen, with the way that thing ended on Sunday as well. So I'm very curious to see if the home field means anything for Minnesota. I'm very curious to see how angry the Seahawks are if they go back to their roots and try to pound the ball, which they did not do in the second half of that game on Sunday. And I'm very curious to see what Kirk Cousins looks like against this defense, because Kirk Cousins actually played pretty well against the Cardinals over the weekend. It was the defense that kind of let him down. So you've got a secondary in Seattle. And this is where I'm going with this. I was talking about this on Twitter today, that sometimes things are what they appear to be. And over the offseason, most of us sat around and said, I don't know about this secondary, man. They got to go out and do something.
That's correct.
They got to draft somebody. They got to trade for somebody. They got to sign somebody. There's a reason why we're all talking about Richard Sherman, blah, blah, blah. And they did nothing of significance to fix that secondary at the cornerback position. They really did nothing of significance, period, for the secondary, because they already had Jamal Adams and they just extended him. They brought back Quandre Diggs. They brought back Trey Flowers. They brought back DJ Reed. I mean, their biggest acquisition they made in the secondary was Sidney Jones. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Guy who's been banged up for 3 years. And I'm hopeful that he can play and play well, but nobody's expecting the guy to be an all-star, obviously. So I feel like what the Seahawks did to help the secondary was rely on, from their perspective, Dick, hopefully a better pass rush, which hopefully as the year goes on, we'll see that. Didn't see it Sunday, but hopefully in the next 15 games, we'll see it. And I'm sitting here today just as concerned about that secondary and specifically those corners today as I was back in like June, because they did nothing of significance to improve it. And I hope it's not their downfall. I hope it doesn't come back to bite them in the butt.
I think that secondary is really going to be determined by the teams that they play, because you played, I mean, how many receiver cores are going to be better than A.J. Brown and Julio Jones? Two or three, maybe at the most that you play all year. Mm-hmm. So you played one of your toughest secondary matchups in game number 2. You did well for a half and poorly for a half. You're going to play probably another top 3 or 4 that you're going to see all year long this week with Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson.
Right.
So you get tested early. But you look at this division. Do the receivers really scare you in this division?
DeAndre Hopkins does.
Okay, there's one. But, I mean, Rondell Moore, Christian Kirk, Debo Samuel, Robert Woods.
And Cooper Kupp, those two are massively scary.
Yeah, the Rams are pretty good. I wouldn't put them on the same level as the Titans, for sure.
Or the Vikings.
But they're pretty good.
Yeah. Or the Vikings. Yeah. So, I think all in all, you're going to need some production from Sidney Jones because I finally did it. I waved the white flag on Sunday. I did it to you in text. I'll do it on the air now. I've waved the number 21 flag.
Wow.
I've waved the Trey Flowers flag. I flew the flag for what, four years? How long has he been here? Is this his fourth season?
Hang on a second. Wow.
Wave the flag.
312 on September 21st.
Wave the flag.
Payne is off the Flowers wagon.
I went to the flag, and I just slowly lowered it. Taps was playing as I lowered the flag, and I said, I just can't defend him anymore. It was an uphill battle.
It took you two games.
I said, it's taken me two games in a couple of years.
But hang on a second. I'm going to give you a chance to pull this back.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a chance to pull it back. Because this is like USC and Clay Helton, right? If they're going to fire him two games into the 2021 season, then why the hell didn't they fire him over the offseason and go out and hire somebody else? If you were on the Trey Flowers wagon going into the year, then you should give him at least two games to prove himself before you jump off.
I just wanted to see some semblance of improvement and some semblance of production. I wasn't looking for top 20 corner in the NFL out of Trey Flowers. I was looking for, can you be top 40 corner in the NFL to go along with DJ Reed? Is that and right now, I think you could definitely find 40 corners in the NFL you'd rather have playing over there than Trey Flowers.
Well, I'm concerned about it. And I agree with you that when they play teams that have really good wide receivers, which is what you're saying, they're going to struggle. I will take it one step further, Dick, in that I'm worried about the Seahawks corners making average wide receivers look better than average. And that is where I think you got to draw the line.
Right.
I mean,
you want to
get torched by Julio Jones and A.J. Brown. It's Julio Jones and A.J. Brown. And I thought at one point during the game, hey, the defense actually is playing pretty well. Mm-hmm. Julio Jones has his because he's Julio. But for the most part, the defense is playing pretty well. What was the score at halftime again?
24-9.
24-9. Nobody would have turned down 9 points at halftime against that offense.
Which is why I'm wondering why so many people on Twitter say the Seahawks had a horrible game defensively. They had a horrible half defensively.
Well, but, I mean, we're splitting hairs here. I mean, if you crap the bed in the second half, who gives a damn what happened in the first half? Is this like you get points for a half?
Well, no,
honestly.
Okay, but just to be fair, so we're saying if you have a great half and a bad half, then you had a bad game.
I think
so. In order to have a good game, you have to have a great half and a great half.
You're going to make me go into my notes.
Okay, I'm trying to see what the semantics are. In order to have a great game, you're telling me we have to play four great quarters. But if you play three great quarters or two great quarters, then not only is it not a great game, it's a bad game.
I'll be honest with you. I don't know how to answer this question because the Seahawks defense gave up 345 yards in the second half.
It was awful.
Who cares what they did in the first half? They gave up 171 yards rushing in the second half.
Okay.
Why do we care what they did in the first half if they lost the game 33-30?
Because
you honestly want to throw these guys a bone?
No, I just think that what they did in the first half was they gave you an opportunity that all you had to do was put a touchdown on the board in the second half. A touchdown with an extra point, and you win the game. And they were not able to do that.
Well, if you're living in that world, though, who knows what the Titans do to respond, right? I mean, the game went the way it did. So if there's an alternate universe where the Seahawks actually, one of those final four drives where they had, what I say yesterday, 12 of the 13 plays, they had 16 yards of offense. They were miserable.
Miserable.
Okay, so let's say one of those drives, they break one and they score. Mm-hmm. What does Tennessee do on the next drive? I don't know. Maybe they follow it up differently. Maybe they call the game differently if they're down two scores instead of one. But if you're asking me, do you have to have two good halves to play a great game? If one of them is embarrassing, you can absolutely flush away what happened in the first half. For sure. I mean, let me ask you this. If the Huskies go out and get boat raced by Cal on Saturday, do you think at all about 52-3? Of course you don't. They're 1-3. Who gives a damn? It's about the entire picture here, Dick. So I don't even know how to respond to this. I thought Saturday was a complete and total meltdown on both sides of the ball.
Sunday,
special teams with the missed extra point, which turned out to be gigantic. Yep. The defense was awful, and the offense was awful. And I don't know how else to put it. Now, does it mean they'll be awful again this weekend? Of course not. Hell no. They could totally bounce back. But if we're looking at Sunday in a vacuum, then yeah.
It sort of goes back to the argument we had, for the first month of the offseason about how the Seahawks blew it in the wild card round against the Rams. They blew it. But, Dick, we talked extensively about the appreciation you had for the regular season, winning the NFC West, the fun regular season, right? But what does that matter if you bow out in the wild card round just like this? What does it matter winning the first half if the second half you blow it? It doesn't matter.
They cooged it. They did.
They cooged it.
It was the second.
No,
it was the biggest collapse in 17 years at home.
Yes.
Freaking cooged it. So do Cougar fans give themselves credit because they led UCLA by 20 points at halftime and gave up 70 in the second half?
No, I guess my point is, if half the game's good and half the game's bad, then it's automatically bad, is what you're saying.
Well, duh. Yeah, I think so. I mean, unless I'm totally missing some, I thought this was a pretty easy proposition.
Well, I think the argument, though, is whether to blame the offense or the defense. And I'm already seeing people calling for the head of Kent Norton after game number two. Wait a second. I mean, did they not play a really good defensive game in week one?
Yeah, they did, but against a much inferior offensive opponent in the Colts. I mean, they had nothing going on.
So again, you do what you're supposed to do, you get no credit.
Yeah.
You don't do what you're supposed to do, you get blamed. So when do you get credit? You have to shut down a freaking Chiefs to get credit?
Yeah. When you play the best teams the NFL has to offer and you win and you look good, yeah, I think you get credit for that. Absolutely.
Wow, I'm glad I'm not in this class. I'd never get an A.
What's the standard? The standard is to win a championship, right? That's what we're all doing here. I mean, the Niners had a pretty good offense in 2013. The Seahawks shut them down. Broncos had the number one scoring offense in the history of the NFL, and the Seahawks shut them down. I'm not saying that every year should be held to that standard.
And it will never be.
Right. We'll never see that defense ever again. But if you're trying to win a Super Bowl, you can't give up 350 yards of offense in the second half to anybody.
Agreed.
Anybody.
Agreed.
So, look, I mean, both the Huskies and Seahawks are kind of on. I had this conversation with a buddy of mine the other day. I just want to explain what I'm talking. Both teams, Washington and the Seahawks, have had one game where they really had a chance to kind of judge themselves against a pretty decent team, right? Michigan for UW and the Titans for the Seahawks. Because the Colts, with the way they're banged up and their offense right now, I think the Colts might be okay by the end of the year.
I think they'll be good by the end of the year.
They didn't look like it last weekend,
right?
Okay? So the Michigan game was the Huskies' big test so far,
yes,
right? And the Titans game was the Seahawks' big test. And both of them failed miserably in both those games. So let's re-rack it and see what happens again down the road. Maybe the next test for UW is really UCLA. Maybe it's Oregon. I have no idea. Maybe the Seahawks' next big test is the Niners in 2 weeks from now. Or the Rams. Maybe you think it's Minnesota.
I mean, they're 1-point favorites. Of course it's this week.
Right, but I'm just saying from a standpoint of a team that could potentially win a title or win a division championship,
right.
I think the Niners and Rams are in a different plane than Minnesota.
Agreed.
Would you agree with that?
Yes.
So I would put Minnesota more so above the Colts, but I put them also behind the Titans. So I just think the criticism of Ken Norton Jr. isn't also just about what happened this weekend. It's about what he's done since he became the defensive coordinator. I mean, I like Ken Norton as a person, but how is that relevant? Relevant at all. Have you been impressed by Ken Norton Jr. as the Seahawks defensive coordinator overall since he came here?
Overall, no, but he took a team that everybody says the worst defense in the world last year through September and October and turned them into the number one sack and great defense in the second half.
But you
half.
Said it right there. Overall, no. Overall, you've not been impressed. You saw one good half of football when the competition was inferior on the opposite side of the ball after they went out and made the move for a guy like Carlos Dunlap. Now, he's not going anywhere. Pete Carroll is not going to fire a coordinator in the middle of the year. That's not how he rolls, right, for God's sake.
Nor should he. If he did it last year, it would have been disastrous.
Exactly. We'll see how things go, but I think the Hawks absolutely should be judged against the best competition the NFL has to offer. We'll talk more about this coming up next on Softy and Dick. Fact or Fiction next on 950 KJR.
Counting you down to the first puck drop in Kraken history.
In the slot, he scores!
When they face off.
Where? So you know what that means? It's Taco Tuesday!
Softy and Dick on 950 KJR.
Fact or Fiction brought to you by our friends at the Emerald Queen Casino. Coming up in about 4 minutes right here on the radio show. We gave you USC minus the points yesterday against the Mighty Beavers of Corvallis, Oregon on the show. So today is Tuesday. It might be a Taco Tuesday according to our friend LeBron, but it's also Dick Day on the radio show. For Fact or Fiction, think about this schedule. Think about you and me and Jackson, all three of us here, because we're a team, baby. If we're all sitting there on KFAN Radio in Minneapolis, Minnesota, don't you know? And we're talking about the Seahawks and the Vikings this weekend in Minneapolis, how big a game this is. So you tell me, after the Seahawks game, how you think the Vikings will do. Browns at home in Minneapolis. That was kind of a toss-up, right?
Yeah.
Lions in Minnesota.
Win.
Okay, here we go. At Carolina.
Probably lost.
Home against Dallas.
I can even win that.
Really?
I don't like Dallas.
Okay. At Baltimore.
Loss.
At the Chargers.
Loss.
Home against the Packers.
Probably a loss.
At the Niners.
Probably a loss.
That's what they got coming up.
Yeah, it's
up.
Like a must-win.
Yeah, totally. Like doesn't that scare you a little bit?
Well, yeah, it always scares. I hate playing teams off losses.
Yeah, just like Tennessee the week before.
Painful losses.
I told you.
Yes, I do not like playing teams off of losses. But Seattle's got it going for them, too. I think if Seattle would have cruised and won 31-16.
Yeah. Yeah.
And 2-0, sitting pretty. Everybody's talking about the Hawks. If they win by two touchdowns on Sunday, everybody in
if
the country.
If they finish the deal.
If they would have finished the deal, everybody would have been talking about, like, top five. Hey, Colin Cowherd already had the Seahawks as his number three ranked team in the league before that game on Sunday.
Where are they now?
I haven't even seen.
Prisco has him at like 25.
Well,
Prisco has everybody else in the division in the top five in the NFL except for the Hawks.
Well, Florio's got him 19. I mean, come on. I mean, I think that's just them being like. Can anybody honestly really shut your eyes and see the Hawks as the 19th to 25th best team when the season ends?
The only way I could see that is if these corners are as miserable as we thought they'd be over the offseason. And if the division is so good that they just go like 2-4 in the NFC West, right?
Okay.
And don't even factor into the division championship, which I could see that. I mean, if you're going 2-4, then you're getting swept by somebody, right?
Yeah.
Would it shock the hell out of you if you lost both games to the Rams?
No.
Would it shock the hell out of you if you lost both games to the Cardinals or the Niners, one of the two teams? Because that's all it takes to go 2-4.
Yeah, that's all it takes. I mean, that's worst case scenario.
Right.
But yeah,
right.
I mean, I guess it's worst reasonable case scenario.
It's not going to stun you. You're not going to go, oh, wow, I never saw that hump coming. But Russell Wilson, I saw a stat here courtesy of the Seahawks PR account, by the way. And I want to know more on this.
Stats are for losers.
Before I bet the Hawks minus the two against Minnesota, I got to see what Kirk Cousins does coming off a loss, which is why I'm bringing up kind of the wounded animal philosophy about the loss to the Cardinals on Sunday. Russell Wilson, after a regular season loss since 1970, and he obviously hasn't played since 1970, but this is all quarterbacks since, like, what, the merger, I guess.
Yep.
We're talking 52 years. Andrew Luck was 25-8, 75%. Joe Montana, 30-9, 77%. Danny White was 17-5, so a much smaller data point, but 77%. Tom Brady is 50-14, coming off a regular season loss since 1970, which is 781. Russell Wilson is 34-9.
Hey, Seattle.
Coming off a loss, which is the best record in the NFL for a starting quarterback since 1970. He wins 79% of the time after the Seahawks lose a football game. So, I don't know. I mean, that obviously would be in your favor. But then you kind of mix that with the Vikings being 0-2 and looking 0-3 in the face, and that scares me.
I think the line's probably where it should be. This is a no-touch game for me because I could see it going both ways. I wouldn't put any money on the Seahawks in this game, but I also wouldn't panic if they're 1-2 either. I just honestly wouldn't. But, you know, like you asked me, what would it take to panic? Probably, I mean, 2-4, then you're probably starting. But you know what? His Pete Carroll team has started 2-4 before and made the playoffs. So,
absolutely.
I mean, they've consistently, they figure themselves out over the course of the year, and I really put very, very little stock in what the Seahawks look like in September because they have shown year after year after year they are a different team in November, December than they are at the beginning.
Yeah,
of the
I mean, they could just as easily go 4-0 and lose in the first round of the playoffs just by going 2-2. I mean, what's the difference? Right? same thing could happen in January. What the hell? I'm kidding. But it's sarcasm. Come on. Work with me on this, guys. Come on. Fact or fiction right now.
It's time for fact.
Just a fact, Jack. That's a fact, Jack.
Or fiction, powered by the Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest.
That is a fact.
Jackson looked like, oh, he's stunned. Man, jeez.
Stunned at green.
Well, I mean, but that's what we're all judging him by, right? Is what happens come January. End of story. All right, fact or fiction brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. Every day at 3:35, we give you a game. We gave you USC minus the points against the Mighty Beavers of Oregon State yesterday. Tuesday, Dick Day. Dick Day, what do you got?
Well, last week I took the Colts, and 38% of people believed in me.
Well.
And so only 38% were winners. I took the Huskies when everybody said, oh, the Huskies suck, and they were winners as well.
You know what that means, by the way? 38% what? Winners.
What's that?
62% were freaking losers.
Exactly right. And I don't think a lot of people are going to go with me on this pick. And you know what? I don't give a damn.
Wow. Wow.
The Washington Redskins, when the line opened.
You mean the Washington football team?
Oh, yeah. Washington football team.
You can't say that anymore.
Sorry. Yeah. The Washington football team, when the line opened, was a 3-point favorite in this game against Buffalo at the beginning of the season.
Okay.
The line has moved 11.5 points.
Wow.
They are now getting 8.5 points.
Where's the game?
On the road in Buffalo.
Okay.
I think Taylor Heinicke is more than fine. Mm-hmm. I think they got a good running game.
Good
I think they got a great wide receiver, and I think they got the best front four in football. I think really they give the Bills all they can freaking handle. I still think the Bills will win.
Okay.
But 8.5 is way too big. Give me the team formerly known as the Skins. Plus 8.5 at Buffalo.
Okay, I like it. And they're coming off a very comfortable win last week against Miami, which
is like
having a bye.
Yep.
They won 35-0, so they're probably all cocky.
Fat and happy.
Thinking their you-know-what don't stink.
That's right.
So we're going to take the Washington football team. Is it 8 or 8.5,
by the way?
Plus 8.5 against the Bills on Sunday. If you agree, it's fact to 49451. If you disagree, it's fiction to 49451. But why the hell would you go fiction when in 29 games on this radio show, including Wilner, Neuheisel, and Sterling, we are 22-7 against the spread? So fact or fiction, all courtesy of the Emerald Queen Casino. You mentioned, by the way, their front four.
Mm-hmm.
Am I not mistaken, but do they have 4 first-round draft
picks? Correct. Only team ever. Line. Yeah. Only team in NFL history.
Chase Young, Daron Payne, Jonathan Allen, and maybe the best name in the NFL,
Montez Sweat.
Montez Sweat, number 90 at defensive end. And they have a first-rounder at middle linebacker in, is it Jamin or Jamin Davis? The first-round draft pick from this last year.
This
He's
last
also
year.
A first-rounder.
He's a stud,
so you
too.
got 5 first-round draft picks on the front 7 of that defense. So we're going to go Washington plus the 8.5 against Buffalo this weekend. Fact or fiction brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. By the way, if you can manage to stomach our show for about 30 seconds a day, every day at 3:35 we give you a game. Ian goes at 2:35, Puckett at 11:35, and then Chuck and Buck go at 7:35. If you get one pick right a week on any show, you're eligible for a $1,000 weekly prize. The most picks right by the end of the year win $10,000. Washington plus the points is the pick. Fact or fiction brought to you by the Emerald Queen. We're going to go back and talk a little Cougar football. That's right.
What?
That's right. Cougar football. Before we talk Husky football at 4 o'clock on 950 KJR.
Want to listen to Seattle's best sports talk at home? Say, Alexa, play 950 KJR on iHeartRadio. Powered by Sid and Dick on 950 KJR.
I saw a tweet from our guy Pierre LeBrun, which is French for LeBrun, by the way, on Twitter. He's with TSN, is that right, Pierre LeBrun?
I believe so.
Can we get those guys on now on the radio station? Are we now allowed to have guys like that on? Like, do we have special access now that we didn't have before we had a hockey team?
Oh, we couldn't get Pierre on before?
I don't think so. Why would he give us the time of freaking day?
Release the Kraken.
Now we're all crackheads, baby. Let's get him on the air. He writes on Twitter, today's NHL Board of Governors meeting was originally slated to be held in Seattle so owners could tour the new rink. But a month ago, the league said, let's make it a virtual call instead. Maybe because of the Delta thing. I got no idea. Maybe because the rink's not ready yet, obviously. They're going to push that all the way to the wire. But do you realize, guys, that we have a Kraken game on this radio station in 5 days? 5 days from now. Sunday.
Which one of the preseason
night.
Games is first?
Sunday night. They're in Spokane. Okay. I think it's against the Canucks.
Release the Kraken.
This Sunday, Everett Fitzhugh is on the call at 7 o'clock.
That's amazing.
We officially enter the NHL flagship arena. There has not been an NHL flagship radio station in this town, I believe, ever. Because when the Metropolitans won the Stanley Cup in 1917 and left, I think, in 1920, I don't believe there was any radio in Seattle back then. And there certainly wasn't no frickin' sports talk radio in Seattle. So you are about to do something that you've never done in your life on Sunday night. If you're driving around town, flip on 9:50 a.m. and you will be a part of hockey radio history.
I'm excited to hear Everett. I mean, we've heard the drops of his calls, right?
Yes,
but I have not heard Everett in the flow, you know, in the flow of a game and how it sounds. I'm very interested to hear it.
Yeah, he's all right. It'll be a fun day. I don't want to oversell it, man. So anyway, he'll be on with us tomorrow for his weekly visit, but Sunday night. So anyway, the Nick Rolovich thing, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter a couple days ago, but I made a point on social media to just kind of observe that I thought that Nick Rolovich looked like he was in over his head when he was addressing the media, struggling for answers, right? Didn't look very confident in what he was doing. And we would say this about Bush Hamden when he was the offensive coordinator at UW, and you saw this too in person. We'd go to UW for, you know, interviews, and he would be leaning up against the wall, and people would be asking him questions back in the day when you could do it in person, and he would talk to you, but he would stare at the ground when he did it. He wouldn't look you in the eye. And I always thought that was kind of odd when guys did that. Like, that doesn't really show that you have a lot of confidence in what you're doing when you can't even look somebody in the eye. Maybe it's an old school thing for me. I've always thought when you're talking to somebody, when you're addressing somebody, you look them in the eye.
Right.
Right? Okay?
But you're right. It is a confidence thing.
Totally. And I think Bush had some issues in that category, and that's partly why they replaced him, for God's sakes. Rolovich does the exact same thing when he's on Zoom calls. And don't say it's because of Zoom, because Scott Service is also on Zoom and looks right in the camera when he talks to the media. So I see a guy in Rolovich when he's answering questions, Chris Daniels, Brenna Green, you know, kind of going after him about the vaccines or the second half blown leads, which we'll talk about in a second. And he's answering the question and he's fumbling for words, staring at the table while he does it. And I thought that was a horrible look for him. I think it's a bad look for any coach or anybody in a position of authority, for example, Dick, to do something like that. So John Canzano and Puckett were talking today, and Puckett was talking about how they're hearing that he's going to go get media training to learn how to deal with the media. I mean, how freaking bad can this thing get for Wazoo fans? The guy has all this controversy that won't go away about the vaccine. Now he's got to admit that he can't even handle the freaking press in Pullman, Washington. And on top of that, he's blowing second half leads like they're hanging off trees.
Well, he's blowing second half leads at a more than 50% clip. How about this?
It's amazing.
He coached four games last year. He had a double-digit lead against Oregon, lost. Had a double-digit lead against Utah, lost. This year, he's coached three games. He beat Portland State, had a double-digit lead against Utah State, lost. Had a double-digit lead against USC, lost. So in four of the seven football games that he has coached at Wazoo, he has had a double-digit lead and lost those games.
They're fat, dumb, and happy and entitled.
I just think he's way in over his head. And it's got nothing to do with the vaccine thing. I mean, as Joel Klatt said yesterday, just forget that. I mean, if you're a Washington State fan and you're not living in this world where he's pissing people off because of that, you got the blown leads, and then you have all this stuff where now he kind of looks like a guy that never should have been hired, that he wasn't ready for this gig. When you hear somebody come on the air and say that Nick Rolovich is seeking media training, I mean, what the hell? What is this? Like a junior college team? Is this a guy going out and is this his first gig coaching and he's using Wazoo as a guinea pig? I mean, you got to be kidding me. It pisses me off, and I'm not even a Cougar fan.
And I appreciate Coug fans, most Coug fans, for their stance on this. I appreciate Puckett's stance. I appreciate Ian's stance because a lot of times, I mean, especially in this world today, you know, we have a side, right? And we just defend that side to the death. Whether or not you could just put all this ammo on your side and you defend it to the death. And that's not what Cougar fans are doing. And I appreciate that. Now, yes, there are still probably 10-15% of Cougar fans that nothing to see here, nothing to see here.
Sure.
But a vast majority of Cougar fans think the same way that we do, and I appreciate that.
Well, I don't think that every Cougar fan is on board, like you said, with the vaccine side of the
controversy. I'm just talking about the role of it
right.
side of
Well,
things.
But then you've got the media thing, and then you've got the losing games thing, and then you have the way you're losing games thing. The only way that a Washington State Cougar fan could be totally thrilled with the job that Rolovich is doing and totally in his corner with all those factors being ignored is if either A, you're Nick Rolovich or you're his mom. There's no other explanation for that. We'll get a break. Husky Honks coming up next on 950 KJR.
Counting you down to the first puck drop in Kraken history.
In the slot, he scores!
When they face